Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle Radio. Each week, the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in finance take you beyond the numbers and hype, right to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week, we bring you a very special episode focusing on Art Basel Hong Kong. UBS celebrated the 10th year of partnership with the fair with a dynamic programme focused on artist responses to city life. As global lead partner of Art Basel, UBS unveiled a new UBS Art Collection Commission by Chen Wei as part of the group presentation City Visions in the UBS Lounge. Other works on show from the UBS collection included pieces by Doug Aitken, Andreas Gursky, Liu Wei, Rick Lowe, Sarah Morris, Song Dong and Mika Tajima. Elsewhere at the fair, the UBS Art Studio and inaugural UBS One spaces showcased works by Chen Kailun, a neon artist who pays homage to Hong Kong's heritage of neon sign making. On today's programme, we'll be in Hong Kong to hear from Chen Kailun. She'll tell us about the beautiful works she has contributed to the fair in her hometown. But we start this special edition in conversation with both Carola Visa, Senior Art Advisor at UBS in the Division of Family Advisory, Art and Collecting, and alongside her, Iwan K. Lukminto, Collector and Founder of Tumuran Museum in Solo, Indonesia. A warm welcome, Carola and Iwan, to the programme. And Iwan, let me start with you. How long have you been coming to Art Basel Hong Kong? And what are you most excited about as it rolls around in your calendar each year?
I have been visiting Art Basel in Hong Kong for in the past maybe 5 years. And what I'm excited about to see is, you know, what new artists that the gallery is bringing to be introduced in the Art Basel itself. And I think Art Basel is a good platform for gallery also to introduce new artists. And this way, I think it will broaden the knowledge and the information to the collectors. That's really exciting.
Well, yeah, and let me ask you a little bit about the impact that Art Basel Hong Kong has had and continues to have. I guess, as you say, not just in terms of how it moves the needle for collectors, but for the whole region. It's such a critical event, isn't it, to train a lens on this most dynamic and creative part of the world for the art scene?
Yes, I believe Art Basel is still the leading art fairs within Asia itself. So everyone is looking up to the event of Art Basel in Hong Kong. Therefore, I think it's important to have the presence here, to be in the fair and to talk to people and to continue to expand our networking here with new galleries and new artists and new collectors also. It's quite exciting art fairs that is happening here.
Well, you mentioned new collectors there, Iwan, and I wanted to ask you about this. If there are collectors maybe visiting Hong Kong for this year's edition who've not been to the fair before, are there any kind of tips that you've developed over the years? What should people keep in mind if it's their first visit in order to best make sense of what they see, but to get the most out of the experience?
I think by visiting Art Basel, it can give you a really wide range of available arts out there. And I think it can give you a broader knowledge and, you know, sort of networking with the other collectors, networking with other galleries, new galleries, and also mingle with the artists. I think that's important to know when you're buying an art. You have to really know what's the meaning and how important is this work to the artist. And I think that is the important points that the Art Basel can be a platform for us to be like an art hub in Asia.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're lucky on this program. We're going to hear from Chen Kailun later in the program about some of her work that's at the fair this year. Tell me about what you were most looking forward to, Iwan, then before you arrived, is it that you want to catch up with certain galleries or gallerists? Is it specific artists that you like? Or do you just like to, yeah, take the temperature and stroll the halls of the fair and see what grabs your attention? What do you get most excited about before you arrive?
I think aside from the excitement of seeing what artists that the galleries are bringing here to show us, but also the art scene that is happening in Hong Kong itself, because Hong Kong is dedicated this week to be in the Art Week of Hong Kong. And, you know, there's a lot of things happening here, not only for the fair itself, but the shows that is happening throughout the city. And museums also have special programs, especially for this period of time. So it's a quite exciting week for us to expand our network and to meet the new people here in Hong Kong.
Absolutely. It's these amazing forums, isn't it, Ewan, where people come together from across the region and all around the world, indeed. And there's so many exciting conversations. Just while we have you, I did want to ask you a little bit about the scene back home, obviously, in Indonesia. Just give me a quick snapshot of the dynamics. What's the discourse around art and collecting there in your kind of day job, if you like, Ewan? How lively a scene? It's something that we've talked about a little bit at Monocle actually before, but for maybe people who aren't familiar with the art scene there, what are some of the most exciting things that are happening at the moment?
I think the most exciting things is now that because contemporary art, even the younger artists are now coming out, and a lot of them have different views, and because of our backgrounds, then they have different way of delivering the message towards arts. So with our population of 250 million population, and I think this will have create an impact within Asia itself, and its ever growing demand, I believe it will create better ecosystem in Indonesia.
For sure. And I probably shouldn't ask you this, but is there a particular name, someone we should be watching out for that you've seen who you just think is the embodiment of that new dynamism and innovation there? And any kind of standouts that we can keep an eye on to see more of on the world stage, maybe?
To name a few, it's quite difficult because, you know, from which aspect we want to see. We want to see it from academic aspect or in terms of commercial value, in terms of popularity. It's a different judgment. I couldn't list name of artists that is happening now, but it depends. It depends on the preference of our personal judgment.
Yeah, that's a very diplomatic answer, Ewan. Well done. You're a diplomat as well as a collector and founder. Ewan, thanks so much for chatting to us. Let me invite Carola to jump in now. Carola Visa, great to chat to you as well. You know, working inside UBS in the family advisory on art and collecting, which must be just an amazing, you must have some amazing conversations. Tell me a bit about what it's like to have those conversations in this setting where we find you now at Art Basel Hong Kong. I mean, it must be a real highlight of the calendar for you, right, Carola?
It's definitely one, if not the highlight of the year. And it's definitely also one of the busiest weeks in the whole calendar of the year. But obviously, I'm enjoying it tremendously to speak with all those different collectors flying in from all parts of the world, Europe, Latin America, Southeast Asia, Greater China, I mean, even the US. It's such a communication platform, networking platform. It's a platform for connectivity. And I think we should not forget about that. Thought leadership. And you can especially also see that in the floor plans that Art Basel Hong Kong has set out this year.
Absolutely. And we should say, I mean, if any listeners haven't had the chance to attend Art Basel Hong Kong, there's an amazing dynamic on the ground, which is well worth experiencing. Just tell me about first impressions then, Carola, when you arrived at this year's edition, or just as you kind of, again, I asked Ewan about this, as you're sort of strolling the halls, what really jumped out, aside from that amazing dynamism, that almost unique energy that we find there in Hong Kong, what are some of the things that jumped out at you?
I mean, definitely the thought leadership, because we tend to forget. I mean, collectors come also to educate themselves. And this year at Basel Hong Kong has set four different sectors. One is insights, which I think is pretty amazing, even for me as an advisor. I mean, I was strolling around last evening. Finally, the last 40 minutes, I had time to see all those different artists, especially also working with ink. And they are being shown in the insights section. Many very classic positions that have been either overlooked or haven't been not having yet their place in the art history that they deserve. So that is something that was clearly one of the highlights. The discovery section is obviously always really cool because that gives you art and access to art at a wholly different price point level. So I saw, for instance, some very interesting and exciting South African positions that I was drawn into. The cabinet section obviously is even something more than the insights. It's sometimes a very curated position of a very confirmed artist already that probably didn't have the chance yet to be shown to this full extent at Art Basel Hong Kong. And I saw some pretty cool things there. In the encounter section, let me just take out two very particular examples. There's one work by Hege Yang. She is also part of our UBS art collection, and we are very proud to say we have discovered her also at a very early stage in her career. And the work is a very large installation. It's actually one of the largest installations at Encounters, and it's a particularly beautiful work. Another work that was shown in one of the Bainter galleries was a work by, and a series actually, by Alicia Quade, an artist that is also part of the UBS art collection that I personally cherish very much. And she also works with the notion of time and the passage of time. And this is one of my personal favorite series of her body of work. And I was truly thrilled to see them in a very large scale for the first time.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned the UBS Art Collection, because we've had the privilege on this programme of speaking to Mary Rozell, of course, on a number of occasions. And it's an astonishing body of work, and it's changing and being added to all the time, which is hugely, hugely exciting. Give me your recommendations, Carola. We heard from Iwan about how he sort of tackles the fairgrounds, if you like. To the new visitor, maybe someone who's not been before, how are they best to tackle all of the offerings? As you said, there's so much going on. What's the best way for a novice visitor to the fair to approach things to make sure they don't miss anything important?
Well, I would definitely grab a floor plan. That's probably the basics. I mean, obviously, there's also an online floor plan, but I'm a little more classic, so I usually grab the pinned out plan. So I like to have something in my hands and to take notes. So don't forget the pen, please. And don't lose the pen, even more important, because you get distracted and many lose the pen. So it's important to take notes, because sometimes something catches your eye and then you tend to forget, or you forget to even mark the gallery. So you probably saw the work, but you can't think of the gallery anymore. So it's really important to very academically take your notes. And also take your time to digest. I mean, you're on your feet for a couple of really long hours. You're walking kilometers. So comfortable shoes are definitely a must. As much as high heels have been in fashion in the last, let's say, 20 years, I mean, I don't see them anymore at the fair. Everybody feels quite comfortable in his sneakers or ballerinas. And this is a next really big recommendation that I would have. And definitely have a good breakfast, because you get carried away. And luckily, you won't eat the whole day. So this is some practical information, and I sound probably like a mommy, but yes, that will be the basics, and I would repeat it like almost like a mantra to all of my.
I love that, Carola. It's really good. They're very analog. I like those. That suits our kind of monocle way of tackling the world as well. Very old school, which is great. Just finally, Carola, whilst we have you here, I want to ask you, if we just take a step back and reflect, and this speaks really to the work you do all year round, I guess, you know, working in art advisory, just remind us about the long-standing relationship, obviously, that UBS has globally with Art Basel as lead partner for such a long time. Why is this so important in the bank? You know, your passion bubbles through, and we can hear from great collectors like Iwan and from artists like Chankolin, who we're going to hear from in a moment. But just remind us from your point of view and from the bank's point of view, why is this commitment to contemporary art such a critical thing for you all?
Well, it's a parallel to what we do in private wealth management, because, I mean, we would like to understand to the fullest extent the needs and also the interests and the passions of our clients. And with this said, a portfolio management is not only based on the pure data. I mean, obviously, it has to be data-driven and data-baked, but it obviously goes beyond it. And especially if we are speaking in between generations and the next generations to come, you obviously would like to preserve a portfolio for the next generations. You need to build up on a long-term basis. And with this said, a passion for collecting is usually something that is handed and passed down to the next generations. That's why we want to embark to a longer conversation, a deeper conversation, a more insightful conversation. And that is also underlined with the data that we show in our UBS and Art Basel Global Art Market Report and the collecting survey. So on the one hand, we have the data-driven side. On the other hand, we have the personal encounters and the research and the exchange between our clients, collectors, and advisors.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, Iwan, let me just ask you, before we let you go back, I know it's so busy there, tell me a little bit more about the museum and the naming convention, because I think it's a story that will really resonate with our listeners wherever they are in the world.
Yes, the Tumurun, actually, we got the name from Japanese language, which is passing down from one generation to the next. And I think this is a way of collecting, of creating a legacy. And this collection, I hope in the future that it could benefit the more generations to come. And I believe this is in the same direction, the same vision as UBS on keeping the family to have a legacy that can be passed from one generation to the other.
Iwan K. Lukminto. And before that, Carol Avisa. Well, next up on the programme, let's hear from Chan Kar Lun, the artist behind some compelling works on display at the UBS Art Studio and inaugural UBS One spaces at the fair. Chan Kar Lun, as I mentioned at the top of the show, is a neon artist who pays homage to Hong Kong's remarkable heritage of sign making. It's a delight to welcome her to the programme. Chan Kar Lun, thank you for your time. I know how busy it is this week of all weeks. Tell me a bit about the environment there, first of all, in Hong Kong for an artist pursuing the kinds of work, the kind of practice that you do. It's an extraordinarily dynamic, a unique place to be working, isn't it?
As an artist from Hong Kong, it is definitely a pleasure for me to be able to exhibit my work or being commissioned from UBS to create a piece of work that is dear to my heart about my own city. And I do feel like Hong Kong is a place where there's a lot of eat me swears and traditional meets contemporary art, and how we try to find different innovative ways to push traditional mediums forward even.
And let's talk about the work, because you're exactly right. It pays homage to this extraordinary craft of the place, particularly neon signage. And let's talk about your work with and in neon, because it's so arresting. And these pieces specifically, Dawn of Lion Rock, Evening Sun on Lion Rock, they're obviously they're luminous and they are about joy and they reflect that spirit of the place you've described. But tell me about why and how you pay homage to this neon craft in the place. Why is that of such an interest to you?
So when I was tasked by UBS to create two pieces about Hong Kong city life, our culture and heritage, I think a lot of people might expect some of our very significant visual symbol like pawn shop signs or very dynamic streetscape. And for me personally, as a neon artist, I think the medium itself is already a visual symbol of Hong Kong. So I've been spending a lot of time thinking about different subject matter that could be also a visual symbol that represent Hong Kong, like our ding ding, our tram, like dim sum, egg waffles, or even like boats on the harbor. And then as I was trying to find inspirations, I realized they all share a common value, that the reason why we can still enjoy these transportation, like food or service today, is because there is a huge group of Hong Kong people who have been working so hard, like all these years, all these decades, facing different daily challenges every day, and how they overcome them and sustain it in a way that we can still enjoy the fruit of these products and services. And I think this is the kind of spirit of Hong Kong that I want to present, and kind of like the humanity of it as well. And while I'm also creating the piece, I was listening to this old classic song called Si Ji San Ha, Under the Lion Rock, sang by a local artist called Rowan Lowe. And when I was listening to it, it talks about how we are still facing like happiness over sorrow every day, and how we overcome different daily challenges. And I find that really dear to my heart. And so in the end, I used the Lion Rock Mountain as a symbol for this piece to show the determination of the Hong Kong people who are living here.
I love that. And I think what's interesting, looking at the pieces and looking at the craft with which you use neon, there is that amazing, funny contradiction, isn't there? It's obviously very strong and very luminous, but it's also very fragile and there's something, and very precious. And there's something maybe about Hong Kong as well, and Hong Kong's identity that you've spoken about, which is the same. But the pieces are, they have that lovely playfulness, don't they, of fragility and strength. Is that why you particularly enjoy working with neon and with glass in this way?
Yes, definitely. I always find neon as a very interesting medium, where I find it similar to, or I would put it as an analogy of life, that the medium itself, because it's made with glass, gas and electricity, that the glass seems very fragile, but it's very strong at the same time. And that If it is broken, we can always repair it by just melting it together. And when we're doing neon bending, there's a lot of bends and twists, and it is very malleable, so we can at the same time change it the way that we want. So similar to our life, where in general, we will face different kind of challenges. We might be feeling upset at some moment, but we can always pick ourselves up. And that I believe that we can always find a solution to things and shape our life depending on how we want it. Is definitely up to us, just like how neon bending is.
And I love how, in terms of the actual form of the piece, there is this amazing shape. It's kind of like a, I guess, like a Chinese scroll or like a Chinese fan. It's so seamless the way that these modern materials respond to these older motifs. And that, again, that meeting of ancient and modern, you talked about a meeting of East and West, but the old and the new, I think they come together very beautifully. Were you happy with how that effect came together?
Yes, definitely. So this piece is actually inspired by one of my previous commissioned work for a client where I reinterpret traditional Chinese blue and white ceramics. Because in the traditional Chinese art, you will see a lot of motifs about clouds and fire. And in my previous work or in my collection, I'm already trying to reinterpret it into a more modern design. And so actually applying these kind of motifs again to compile how the lion rock and the clouds and the natural environment would look like. And so for me, that's why it is also a way of how I'm reinterpreting traditional Chinese art. And that also a lot of times we will find Chinese art or Chinese painting in scrolls or in fan shape. So I'm also trying to use this opportunity to use these elements to put into the work as well.
Chungun, just finally perhaps, and I guess I mean this more broadly, when viewers in galleries or in public spaces, wherever they might engage with your work, what are you most eager for people to take away with them? Is it that they just have an emotional response? What kinds of reactions do you like or hope, I guess, that your work provokes? Or actually, do you just want them to take a second and engage with the piece and enjoy it? When you think about what people take away from the experience of engaging with your pieces, what does that look like to you?
So I hope that when people are looking at my work, they will feel some positivity or like optimism from it. And basically that's what I want to do with even with a lot of my collections or my work.
Chan Kalun there. And do check out theneongirl.com for more about Chan Kalun and her practice. You can see shots of her beautiful Art Basel Hong Kong pieces there. But that brings us to the end of this edition of the programme. You can listen again and explore more at monocle.com or tune in and follow the show wherever you get your podcasts. You can discover more and find out how UBS can help you at ubs.com. And if you would like to understand and explore UBS's passion for contemporary art and collecting, then visit ubs.com/art. This is The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle Radio. I'm Tom Edwards. Thanks for listening.